Hello and welcome everyone to Game Devastation. I'm your host, Frost. Today we're going to be talking with Ben Ruiz about his experience in developing Aztez. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks so much.
Hey, so once again, thank you for coming on the podcast. There's a bunch of questions that I have for you. I'm really excited to talk to you. I'm a huge fan of combat in games in general. So
awesome.
You're what I would say an aficionado. You're a man that likes to kind of delve into figuring out what's interesting about combat. So before we get into all that, what are you doing? What's your project? What's going on with you right now professionally?
So we are about 3 years into full-time development of Aztez. We're wrapping it up this year, hopefully before summer. But, you know, I've been saying that forever. But the team is two of us, and it's a really technical side-scrolling action game that is half real-time fight sequences and then half turn-based strategy. And not so much like Civilization style, more like Risk style, like something simpler. It's really just a vehicle for combat, but the combat is definitely the meat of the game.
Okay, so I wanted to talk to you about the strategy part because from what I've seen a lot of the fast-paced action stuff, which looks great. So then you have this other part, which is typically not involved with this sort of genre, right? Like you have a second game. Like, how do you make sure that you have a game that will not only satiate the combat people, but then will also have the strategy part not be so like, wait, this isn't combat. What the hell is this?
Right. Well, so the thing is that like the I refer to it more as a board game than a strategy game these days, to be honest. But like it's really just a vehicle for combat, and so we don't refer to it as a strategy game because it's not meant to satisfy the type of person that, you know, gets off on something like Civ or other complex board game style things. It's really just like, you know, take a minute, make some interesting decisions, and it's really just picking the combat sequence that you want to do and then having fun with it and then see how it affects the board. So, cool. You know, it's been redesigned a handful of times, but like it's just one of those things where it's like we kind of remove complexity here and then add a little bit here. We're trying to do something that was more interesting than grabbing ledges. I'm just so tired of that. I'm so tired of it. And I don't think it's enjoyable. And so, wow, we're just trying to do something different.
Okay. So you had said that part of the game had changed a little bit. What has changed since your initial implementation of it?
Well, when I originally designed it, it was like it was a simulation of the actual Aztec Empire. And they did this really, really messed up thing where they would just subjugate the hell out of everything around them. And we were simulating that. It's like, you know, you would push military units into a city and it would terrify everyone. And then the idea was that your little lone one-man army guy was kind of there to clean up messes behind the scenes, right? And so it was one of those things that was just really hard to design. And it just the complexity was applied in different places. So it's just been simplified over time. But yeah, originally it was like a straight up simulation of the Empire. And that was silly.
Gotcha. So where did the idea for Aztez actually come from?
It's mostly me just having been in love with, you know, beat 'em ups my whole life, and just having also always loved the Mesoamerican civilizations. And when it came time to make my own beat 'em up, it was like, oh, natural fit. You know, the Aztecs, like they were already incredibly warlike. It made more sense than like the Mayans or the Olmecs. But yeah, it was just one of those things. It's like this could be a really good aesthetic match. And, you know, you could have this really complex over the top combat experience and the Aztecs would make sense for it. It would look cool. It would sound cool. It'd be fun to apply that aesthetic. It's just kind of a mix and match of loves, you know.
Gotcha. So you were talking about, so I'm a huge history nerd, and you were talking about I think in an interview that I was watching that there's a point where you're setting up the sort of the board for when the Spanish arrive.
Yeah. So when the game starts, it's 100 years before the Spanish show up, which is roughly when the Mexica started the empire. And so the idea is you just last as long as you can. And then eventually get to the point where they show up, and like the ideal high-end goal of the game is to drive them out of Mexico and kind of change history. So, but because of the way we've randomized the board game, like we want people to have a different experience every time. It's different events, different enemies, all that kind of thing. But yeah, it's really just like have an exciting game, and maybe this will be the game that I fight the Spanish and drive them back kind of thing. So it's just that, like, you know, Spelunky and Weird Worlds effect where we just want it to be exciting, and then you have that one amazing game where it happens and you rewrite history, and we just thought that'd be really cool.
Yeah. So you're telling me I'm going to be able to fight Cortez at some point in time?
Yes, he is like the boss, right? Like, awesome. I mean, there's a handful of bosses, but he's the one. Like, he's the one you want to get in there and wreck, and then that's when it's like, oh, here's the incredible ending. Look what you've done. But yes, he's in there and he's awesome.
Yeah, historically speaking, that guy's a huge douche.
Yeah, that guy was a piece of garbage, man. Yeah. I like the idea of it. And, you know, as a Mexican American, it's like it's cathartic. It's like, yeah, what would happen if we actually, you know, got the one up on them, and I'm curious to see it in some form.
Gotcha. So going more towards the combat side of Aztez, how, and this is more of like a developer, and you can also talk about it just from the game experience side, but sure. How do you create solid impacts for fighting?
There's a lot of different properties going into it, and it ultimately comes down to the audio, the animation, and the effects. And those in themselves are like their own, you know, complex disciplines, but you kind of have to have this alignment of things. Like, you want to make sure that you have this really satisfying effect, but first you want to make sure that there's this really good animation. Like, that's honestly where I think it falls apart for most, like, first-time combat developers, is like their animations are really weak. So you throw on these effects and these sound effects that are, you know, built on a shaky foundation, you get these games that don't really feel or look very good. But yeah, you have to have an amazing animation with anticipation and a lot of good follow through. I'm a traditionally raised animator, by the way, so it was really important to me that we nailed that. But yeah, it's really all these different things coming together to create that awesome feeling.
Very cool. So I noticed that you had a lot of air combat in the game.
Yes.
What kind of led you to think, like, we're going to have a lot of juggles and air combos and, you know, have a very launching up enemies centric form of gameplay? Like, what led you to do that in your game?
Well, I guess a lot of it is just the influence from, like, the last, you know, 11 or 12 years of beat 'em ups. Like, ever since Devil May Cry happened, like, the world realized that you can do really fun stuff in the air. And, you know, when you look back at the old beat 'em ups, it was like, it was very heavy. It was very grounded. You would only ever go into the air to, like, throw a kick. And, you know, why not take advantage of the fact that you have this completely different state and you can do these, you know, interesting animations up there? And yeah, it's just, it's kind of like expected, you know? So to me, it was never really a decision. It was just, it happened. Had to be there from the start. Like, why not?
Cool. Yeah, I mean, from what I was seeing, and I haven't played the game, I'm really looking forward to playing it, but it seemed like there was a lot more than the traditional air juggling too. Like, there were multiple parts of it. It seemed like,
yeah,
you're combining some of the downward thrust or, you know, angle thrust stuff, and then you're also having other air combos, and then the other guys have their air combos and stuff like that.
Right. So, yeah, that actually wasn't, like, how complex it ended up being was not actually intentional. Like, I knew I wanted an air game, but the way I ended up designing these weapons, like, I started with the sword first, and it was one of those things where it's like, okay, I know what I want the basic combo to be, let's implement it. And once it was done, and the end of the combo, you've got the guy blasted backwards, it was like I almost followed a stream of consciousness with all the following mechanics. It was like, okay, he's blasted backwards, what do I want to do now? Then I implemented a dash. Then I implemented a way to bounce a body off the ground. Then I implemented the launcher. And it was really just like, now that I can do this, what do I want to do now? And then this really complex air game ended up emerging from it just because I was having so much fun with it. And then, you know, six or seven weapons later, we've got this just amazing, like, variety of things you can do in the air. And that wasn't necessarily the plan, but it ended up working out because it was fun along the way.
Cool. So I had a question that I wanted to talk to you about, which is kind of segueing from that.
Yeah.
How much of this game did you have written down before you started designing it?
So I had mostly the board game idea written down, but with the combat stuff, that was just kind of intuitive along the way. Like, there wasn't a whole lot written down. Like, it was a lot of high level stuff. It was like, I want it to feel like this. I want these to be basic features. You know, here's a random shotgun blast of ideas. But as far as implementation, the actual combat mechanics, like, that was just all done along the way on the spot, you know?
Interesting. Yeah. No, yeah. I find it's fascinating with talking with different people and, you know, being in the development industry myself. There's points where some people are like, oh, you're going too far down the hole with the documentation, or you're not going far enough. Like, what is the sweet spot to hit to where you have a vision for what you're trying to do, but then not go too crazy into doing that because you're taking away from your actual development time?
Yeah, that's actually a good question. I'm actually not a big documentation guy in general. I used to be a long time ago, and then I just kind of realized like it's not always super useful and it ends up taking up valuable time. But the only reason there ended up being as much Aztez documentation as there was is because at the very, very beginning of Aztez, like before there was a prototype, I was trying to like seduce programmers because I'm not actually a programmer. Like I can't even do basic scripting. Like I'm purely an artist and a designer type. And I ended up documenting a lot of the stuff just so I can say, hey, programmer friend, here's all the stuff I'm thinking of. And that's why it was so high level. I was trying to excite people. So I ended up actually going through a couple different programmers before Matthew, my old boss, decided to just jump on the train and get something done. But that's actually the only reason I did it. I'm not a big documentation guy myself.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So on your website, I was reading that you're trying to get the perfection of Alien versus Predator.
Yes.
In your game. Okay, so I wanted to talk to you. So I love that era of Capcom.
Yes.
Crawlers. Yep. Like Punisher.
Yeah.
Was yep. Like I loved that era. So what about it specifically for you? Are you like, yes, Alien versus Predator is amazing?
Here's yeah. That. Yeah. It's okay. So you know, I grew up in the arcade. Like I'm an arcade kid for sure. And you know, I'm 30, so it's like that was the heyday when I was a kid. Was like that, you know, early 90s, mid 90s period for me. And when I first saw Aliens versus Predator, it blew my mind because it was really, really expressive. You know, the beat 'em ups that had come up before, it's like, you know, they had techniques, they had a little bit of style, but there was really one way to play all the characters. Well, AVP was like you had these four distinct characters. I saw people playing them in all kinds of crazy ways. And when they were playing them, like to their max, it looked spectacular. Like you look at something like Final Fight, which I have a huge amount of respect for, and you know, stuff like Streets of Rage, like when someone's on their game, it looks okay. You know, it's like, okay, yeah, they're doing well. I can see that, but I'm not blown away. Like, this isn't spectacular. And I feel like AVP was the first time I ever experienced that. And it just like blew my young mind wide open. You know what I mean? And it's just beat 'em ups after that, like carried that torch. But that's why it was so influential to me. It's because that was the first time like my jaw dropped watching people play it, you know?
No, I feel you. So I remember that was probably one of the few games where I just bugged the shit out of my parents at the arcades where I was like, sure. I need more quarters. Like I yes. have to complete this game. Like this.
Yeah,
is, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's so perfectly constructed. I mean, it throws you right into this huge fight and you just get to, yeah, everything about it's really wonderful and just so sensational.
Yeah, no, agreed. So you are coming out on a schload of platforms. Like it's really yes. shocking to me how many you've got. Like Linux, you've got Mac, you've got PSP, Vita stuff, you've got yeah. like just the regular consoles that are coming out, and then PC. Mm-hmm. And it's all at the same time. Is that correct?
No, definitely not at the okay. same time. So we work in Unity, and you know, the PC, Mac, Linux thing is kind of out of the box. Like that's something we can do without any problems. But the idea here is to release on Steam first, because that's where the indies are making most of their money anyway.
Right.
And then providing it does okay, then go to the consoles. But we wanted to make sure we had that lined up. So it's official. Like, you know, Microsoft and Sony and Nintendo have all said, yeah, you're welcome to be on the systems. Here's dev kits, etc. But we're going to do that if it does okay on Steam. And I think it will. But that's kind of the contingency plan. Like, all right, it's got momentum. Now let's spend the time to just make sure it's everywhere, you know?
Oh yeah, because my jaw dropped. If you were going to do all those at the same time, submitting to a console is no small feat.
Oh yeah, so oh yeah, like, absolutely not. Oh, yeah, we're expecting a couple months for each console. And the crappy thing is that that's all Matthew too. You know, he's the tech guy, he's the business guy. Like that's going to be all him. So ideally, if it's doing well and we decide to do that, and then he's suddenly got to commit, you know, 4 or 5 months to getting it ready for the consoles, I'm just going to make more content. So hopefully it goes well, and by the time it's on consoles, we can be like, oh, all right, there's an expansion ready too. All right, cool. So fingers crossed it all works out. But yeah, we're not even going to bother if we don't do okay on Steam.
Right. No, it makes yeah. sense. Yeah. So you were just talking about it being two people that you're working on, which, by the way, is yeah. super impressive that you guys have done everything that you've done with two people. So
yeah, thanks.
What are the challenges with that? Because I know that there have to be a lot. But then what are also what's the cool part of just developing with two people?
Well, so the cool part is like I've known Matthew for a really long time. We're really good friends. We're pretty close. And it's I always use the expression like compatible strains of crazy. Like our craziness is okay with each other. And it helps that we don't have to touch each other's work a lot of, because like I'm exclusively combat and he's doing, you know, tech support and writing other parts of the game and like, you know, doing combat writing support, even though that hasn't had to happen in a long time. But yeah, it's a really good relationship, and that's the upside of it. Like, company conversations are us too, which is awesome. Like, there's no bureaucracy, and that's great. But the downside is that just everything takes a really long time. You know, like I have made all the enemies and done all the environments and designed all the characters and implemented everything myself. And he has been supporting me the whole time. Like, anytime I've ever needed anything, he's like, all right, let's make you tools for it. It's really just a time thing. That's a downside. Like, that's why it's been 3 years of full-time development and then maybe a year or two of part-time development too. Like, it's been a long time in the works, but that's to be expected, you know?
Yeah. Now, is this your guys' full-time job?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we both do contract work. Like I do combat consultation because I love it. Like, I just think that's fun, and it's a really enjoyable way to make a lot of money really fast. But he also does a lot of tech contract work for like GDC and the IGF. Like, he's a really amazing like web programmer too. So we both sort of supplement our income, but that's because we like doing those things. But that's very, very part-time.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Very cool. So a part of the reason that I started this podcast was because I remember before I was working on games, I always kind of wondered like, how do you do that? How do you get into games? Like, if I wanted to be a designer, how do I do that? And I found that there weren't a lot of resources for me to kind of figure that out.
Right.
So the question I have for you, good sir, is if you want to be a combat designer or you want to be an animator, how do you get your start into the industry?
Yeah, good question. I'm happy to answer it. Like when I was still in art school, I went to an art school in Phoenix for, it was like a game production program. And when I was doing that, like there was no one to ask questions to, and that sucked. Like, we had a couple instructors that were ex-devs, but you know, they didn't have a lot of time for one-on-one conversations. So yeah, happy to talk about it. For me, animation was something I did when I was really young for fun because I was into it, like flipbooks, you know, and then eventually you evolve to like light tables, and then you know, computers made like homemade stop motion stuff really easy to do. So for me, it was like, it was getting into all these things at a young age and then just kind of grinding on them. But with the animation, I think it's really good to have like a traditional background, because you want to learn the fundamentals. Like, because even like those old ancient 2D fundamentals, those apply to 3D too, I found 100% of the time. So even if you can take like a couple animation classes and get to use some light tables and make some finished animations, like that would be huge, because those fundamentals are critical. But with all things, it's like you also got to do it all the time. You know, like I've been animating forever, so that helps. But I guess as far as game development is, or in general is concerned, like that also kind of happened just with resources I had at home, like using the Blizzard editors were always great. You know, Warcraft 2 had this really great editor, and then Starcraft came out with this really great editor, and then Unreal happened. And these were all things that came with games. And like now, like today, there's those tools times a billion online, a lot of them for free. And so to me, it's really just a matter of digging into this tech, learning it, and then making something, like making a small thing, something you can finish, something you can give to people and get feedback on, and then just grinding on it. Like no one has ever made a new thing in a new field like, oh, this is my first animation and it was good. Like, you just have to do these things over right. and over and over again until you love them and you're good at it, and then just start applying it to games.
Gotcha. Great answer. Yeah. So I was also reading the website, and I was reading your Castlevania Lords of Shadow combat review.
Yeah.
And in it, you had said that you had this extreme disdain for unlocking combat mechanics.
Yes, correct.
Why is that a bad thing?
I actually don't think it's inherently a bad thing. I have a disdain for it because, you know, like as far as combat games are concerned, like I'm an experienced user. Like, I'm very, very comfortable having all the mechanics from the start and getting to utilize them right away and getting to learn it. Like, that's my thing. Like, that's why I'm there. And having to, and being piecemealed is just very frustrating. But like, you know, I understand that there are people who want to be piecemealed. Like, they want to learn things one at a time. And I totally get that. Like, I'm totally behind that. But for me personally, I just wish there was an option where you can be like, I'm an experienced combat game player. give me all the stuff, please. So that's really what it is. Like, I hate to wait 5 hours until I can do everything I want to do, you know?
So if we look at like the Metroidvania thing, typically those are like, okay, you go to this area to get the rope that you can now climb up stuff, or you go to this area to get the drill so I can drill into the ground. Is that something you're not a fan of as well, based off of that idea? Or is it that it's just combat games?
Yeah, in that context, I love it. Yeah, it's really just combat, because it's like when you're playing something like Super Metroid, I love the breadcrumbing. Like that's core to the experience. It's like I know that I'm not going to have everything from the start, and the game is slowly going to give me more things, and they're going to be fun, and that's why I'm there. But with combat games, no, I'm there because I want to have combat. And so it's just, it's the context of what matters, you know?
Yeah, got you. Yeah. Very cool. So I wanted to ask a little bit more about design, specifically with weapons. How do you create items or weapons that maintain their usefulness so that you don't have to, I don't know, defer to one every single time? Like, oh, I've got the one sword of badass, and this is the only one I use because it just wrecks face.
So we took a really specific route. Like, the thing that we're doing with Assets is that we've got a handful of weapons. There's six that are done now, and there's two more that I'm going to make. What I did was that I created weapons that aren't necessarily more or less powerful than the others. It's an expression thing. Like, I like the idea of people using all the different weapons if they want, or also just only using the sword for 100 hours. Like, I don't care about that. Like, to me, it was really just I want people to be happy with the weapons that they have, and they don't have to feel like they're playing with something gimped, you know? And so everything we do, it looks different. It feels different. We've got, you know, very different animations across all the different weapons, different effects. But at the end of the day, you're doing the same amount of damage like per second. You know what I mean? And so that was intentional. It's like I didn't want to do weapon balancing. I didn't want to create this situation where you've got enemies that only respond to this one weapon, and then people had to use the club, even though they hate the club. Like, it's really just all there for fun and for style. And that was our philosophy.
Cool. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about challenge as well.
Yeah.
What is too difficult? What is too easy? How do you guys tune challenge for a game like Aztez?
What has ended up happening over time is that I prefer difficult combat experiences, but obviously no one, including myself, likes something that feels unfair. So we've got these enemies in Aztez. They're very aggressive. You can have enemies that will attack, you know, multiple at a time, you know, up to like three or four different attacks happening at once. But the rule is, if that's going to happen, then we need to have very, very flexible defensive canceling. So it's like with most of the weapons, with most of the mechanics, you can just block whenever you want, and it interrupts whatever you're doing. And so it's kind of like that Bayonetta did this really brilliantly, where it's like you can maintain your aggression and you only have to tap that right trigger as soon as something's about to hit you in order to not die. And I thought that was really beautiful. It's like you don't have this restrictive like Ninja Gaiden style system where it's like, oh, I'm halfway through an attack and someone's about to hit me, I'm hosed because it's not going to let me cancel this.
Right.
But the other thing is that every single enemy attack has a huge broadcast. So even though you can have three or four different attacks coming at you at once, you can see them all a mile away. And that's the idea. Like it's more about you know, watching the screen and just being ready for something. But we're giving you so much warning that people feel like it's their fault. And that's the feedback we get 100% of the time at this point. It was a little rough at the beginning, but people always say, that hit me, it was frustrating, but that's my fault because I saw it coming and like chose to continue to attack this guy. And so that's great. To me, that's the ideal situation, because it's like it is legitimately difficult. And when people win at it, they feel awesome. And when they lose at it, they feel like it's on them, and then they want to get better. So I kind of feel like that's how you got to do it. And it's ultimately why I don't enjoy stuff like Ninja Gaiden, because it's like I'm here to kill people, and I don't want to be punished for trying to do that at like the wrong time. You know, with Aztez, it's like, mash, have fun, do cool things, and just push the right trigger when you're ready to be safe. That's it. So that's kind of how I see it.
Gotcha. So I was going to ask you for what your thoughts were on something like Arkham Asylum. Did you play through that game?
Was that the first one?
Yes.
Yes, I played all the way through the first one. I enjoyed it.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to get your thoughts, because I will have this debate. So I have friends that are super into brawlers and fighters and all these other things.
Yeah.
And I have one side of friends that are like, I absolutely love their system because it's very simplistic, and you, to your point earlier of, you know, you understand why you failed in that regard.
Right.
But then the other side that I hear is that it's actually too simplistic, because you get to see maybe the telegraphs are too easy to see, or it feels like it's almost a QTE sort of thing.
Right.
What were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, so I'm totally familiar with that conversation. between all of, my combat dork friends, that's just it's a classic conversation. I actually don't really necessarily think about it as a beat 'em up. I kind of think of it as a rhythm game. Like, I feel like my brain is doing the exact same thing it does when it's playing Guitar Hero. It's like, just respond on cue to all the things happening, and your position doesn't really matter. Like, there almost might as well not be a character. Like, it could just be like things moving up on a musical cue. Because I found with that, at least that first system, I didn't play any of the following games. It's like, you've got a little bit of analog stick direction because you want to, direct Batman at a certain guy. But like, yeah, it's really just watch for those cues and then push the button in time. And like, if you were to take like footage of my hand or anyone's hand when they're playing Batman Arkham Asylum successfully, it would just be this really rhythmic, almost like piano playing, like dunk, 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 dunk. I thought that was really interesting, but it helps that I don't think of it as a beat 'em up because of it.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, but I really enjoyed it. Like, I thought it was great. Like, I make the music game comparison, but it's still awesome to look at. It still looks like a cool fight between Batman and a bunch of thugs. So it's all good. But yeah, that's how I think about it for sure. It's just, it's hard to put it in the same brain space as something like Devil May Cry.
Yeah, no, I agree. So yeah, I got into a heated debate about it the other day. It was funny.
Yeah.
So one of the things that you also posted on your site, which I appreciate greatly as well, is your hatred for QuickTime events.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Okay, can you talk about A, what is a QuickTime event, and B, why are they bad?
So yeah, all right. So I file these things under a category of mechanics that I call low interaction mechanics. And these are things that take a tiny amount of input and spit out this enormous amount of output. It's complicated. I don't hate them. I understand why they're there, and I think it's okay that they are there. I would like them to be separate from the games that I want to play, like God of War, famous QuickTime events. Right. I would be perfectly, perfectly happy without any QuickTimes in God of War. It doesn't need it. But for me, it's just like it's just kind of a brain trick. It's like, I'm not that cool. All I did was like push triangle when it said to push triangle, and that's okay if pushing triangle when it tells you to push triangle does this quick thing that gives you a quick one up. But like, no, now I have to watch this 30-second bullshit that I'm not here to do this. I'm not here to like watch a movie. And so I just kind of feel like they waste my time, and that's really all it is. I don't think I hate them. I hate playing a game that I've been really looking forward to playing, and then I have to do that. It's so frustrating. Like, it's not enjoyable at all. So I it's one of those things where, again, like, I wish there was an option to say no QTEs for me. I don't want to deal with them.
Yeah. Now, I actually stopped playing the first, or no, it was Battlefield 4. I was playing the main single player part of it. And within 5 minutes, there was one of those. I literally stopped. I was like, look, I'm not even, I'm not doing this anymore. I'll just play the PvP because that's what I like to do.
Yeah. And they're just so, I mean, people love them and I get it. It's like, it makes them feel cool. But like, as an arcade kid, it's like, no, you're tricking me. Like, I'm not utilizing any real skill. Like, this is just a very, very, and maybe there's QTEs out there that I've never experienced that do require like, a certain type of skill, but these are just like, it's like Guitar Hero Lite. Like, oh, here's the cue, push the button, congratulations, you're awesome. No, fuck that. No, I'm not. You're lying to me right now, and it's patronizing.
Well, it's also like, what's going on visually may be cool, but the thing to me as a gamer is like, I want to do that. Like, me do that, not pressing one button. Like, if I'm smashing somebody's head into a spike for pressing three different buttons, that's one thing. But if I'm actually taking the skill necessary to get a guy to there and have some combo that unlocks it to put it into that, that to me seems a lot more rewarding.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just sitting there like, oh, yep, he did the thing because I pressed one button.
Yeah, and what's interesting too is like, I've brought that up to people I've had the QTE discussion with, and it's like, that they say you can't do that. Like, you can't possibly have these like sequences that complicated that you're controlling second by second. And it's like, well, no, go look at a Devil May Cry 3 combo video. Like, it's mind blowing. Like, you don't have the big sweeping camera angles, but what the character is doing looks like it's right out of an action movie, like from the future. And then their argument is, well, no, that's way, way, way too hard to do. And it's like, okay, well, this is the fundamental divide, is because I want to get good enough to look that good playing the game, and you don't. And that's okay, but that's why you and I are fundamentally different. And that's what's always so interesting about it. So I totally get it. I understand that, like, most people don't have the 30 hours it takes to get really, really good at Devil May Cry 3. But at the same time, it's like you're still kind of tricking yourself. So, yeah, it's a really fascinating conversation.
Did you play the more recent Mortal Kombat? I think it was 9.
The one from 2 years ago or so?
Yeah.
I played it a little bit. Yeah, I had a lot of friends that were into it, but I'm not a huge Mortal Kombat guy.
Well, I was going to ask, because they had something where if you hit both triggers at the same time after you'd built up like a rage thing, you would go into this X-ray mode where you'd kind of break the ribs and
do all that stuff.
What are your thoughts on things like that? Because you have to work to get to that point, but then you can unleash something that's kind of like a quick time event. It's just a one shot. You're going to lose 25% of your health on your guy. Like, what are your thoughts on things like those?
Yeah, so I'm into those things because it does require some execution skill. Like to me, I file that under like the fatalities type of mechanics, where it's like, the ones that you just referenced from the most recent Mortal Kombat, like those are not super hard to do, but there's a skill in doing it right, you know? And the other thing is that it also only takes like 2 seconds to watch. And that's the huge difference. Like when you break a skull in Mortal Kombat, you're looking at a little sequence for a few moments and then you're back to the fight. And that's okay. Like that's why fatalities are cool. Like, you know, or ultras in Street Fighter. It's like there's an enormous amount of skill involved in getting this right and getting to the point where I can do this. And then I'm watching a thing for a few moments and then I'm back to it. And so with a quick time event, it's like 5 to 10 times more seconds that you're, you know, watching this thing that you're not actually doing. So a lot of it comes down to the time, but also in the execution. Like that kind of stuff is fighting game mechanics are different beasts. It's like there's a setup there.
Right. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah, I'm down for those.
So one of the things that I was kind of noticing when you were at some of the events talking with people with your game was watching them play and then seeing how they learn and stuff like that. And made me think, how do you guys handle play testing? Like, how do you bring in people to check out stuff, or how do you tune based off of people playing the game?
Tuning is a lot like that's just really a matter of looking for bugs at this point. Originally, it was a lot of like, okay, this makes sense to me. I have no idea how other people are going to think about it. Give it to 10 people and watch what happens. Like pretty straightforward testing stuff. But up until this point, we've really only given the game to like friends and to people who ask for a copy of the game because they're into combat games, and that's fine. But as far as like how to deal with the idea of teaching it to a bigger audience, like that's something we haven't yet tackled, but that's because we aren't in beta yet. So that's going to be one of those things where it's like, we'll figure it out once we have a much larger data pool. But up until this point, it's really just been like, okay, I'm watching, I'm seeing that you start the game differently. Like some people press all the buttons to see what they do. Some don't, like some really struggle. And so it's just kind of like taking a whole bunch of weird data points into consideration and trying to work around it. But this is my first time doing it, so I don't have any real insights. It's just been like watching for problems, I guess. Because I'm not going to do anything, like I'm not going to divert my plan, like my combat master plan based on any one person playing it, but I will solve all the little problems for sure, because I want to facilitate that plan that I have. And obviously I don't want to, you know, dick those people over by keeping things too hard or too simple or whatever it may be. But yeah, that's just a really weird process of watching for problems. It's strange.
Right. So, one of the things I also wanted to talk to you about was tutorials. And so you were kind of alluding to it in your earlier answer there. How do you set up tutorials in a way that or do you set up tutorials? Is it kind of like you just go in and you handle your thing and you learn it? Because earlier you were talking about like, just give me my mechanics, man. I'll figure it out.
Right.
Is that the way that you're going? Or are you going to say like, here's your tutorial on how you play the game? Or how does that work for you?
So we don't have something implemented yet. Like that's kind of what I was saying. Like we haven't gotten to the points where like we have something in place for how we're going to teach people. I know that what I would like to do is put people in a room with a dummy and just give them button cues and just say like, okay, X. Like it's just going to show you X. you push X and you see what happens. Like, my whole goal is just to get people to kind of see the fundamental mechanics. Like, we'll cue them to push up an X because that's one of the basic commands, and then push down an X. And then ideally that they'll learn that there's only a few ways to do things, and it's really just a matter of weapon and state. But I really just want to put people in a room and give them cues so that they discover it for themselves, because I'm not a big fan of like the contrived tutorial of like, here's some text. You're frozen. You can't do anything. Read three things of dialogue, then push the button. Then the game freezes again. Read three more things of dialogue. Like I'm not generally a fan of that because of the time thing. So I'm just trying to think of a really good way to stick people in a room and hope they learn it. But yeah, that's a huge question mark. Like without the mass testing, I don't even know how that's going to go, man. That's one of those scary things.
Right. There was a video I watched a while ago about Mega Man X and how they kind of taught their mechanics this
yeah,
guy.
So yeah.
And maybe you've seen it. It's this guy that's like, oh, Mega Man, so good.
He talks yeah, about I did see that video, and I agreed with a lot of his points that, like, you know, it does a really good job of just naturally kind of introducing you to things. But Mega Man also has, it at its core, like a very, very small handful of very fundamental mechanics. And that's a completely different situation. And so it's like when you've got this game that's hugely expressive and there's a whole huge amount of mechanics that absolutely don't need to be there, they're just there for style, it's a different challenge. And so we've had that argument a lot. It's like, you know, Meat Boy did the same thing. It's like, you know, their first 10 levels were designed to teach you how to use the three mechanics in the game. You know, and that's awesome and that's brilliant and that's wonderful, but we have hundreds of mechanics that are just there for style. So that's why it's a weird question mark. Like, you know, any of the tutorials you see in like the third age beat 'em ups, anything from the last 10 years, like they're either really contrived or they just throw you in the deep end. So, you know, it's one of those huge things that scares me, man. I don't know what we're going to do about that.
Right on.
But yeah, the Mega Man thing definitely doesn't apply. Like, it's a style game. Mega Man's like, Mega Man is a straightforward objective, run left to right game, platformer. People understand it. So, I don't know.
Yeah, it was also, I remember seeing that and thinking like, oh, this works really well. But then you have today's, there's a lot of games today that are way more complicated in right. so many things. And that to me was always the funny part of whenever people would have the argument against, you know, like these hand-holdy tutorials. And I'm not saying that I'm advocating one way or the other for those,
right.
but it seems like there are a lot more, like the amount of stuff that you would have to do in, say, Call of Duty versus right. Mega Man is completely different.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, it totally makes a difference just on the genre of game. So I also was reading that you do this thing where when you're developing stuff, you polish as you go. You don't say like, I'm going to get it into a gray model state and then, you know, we'll get the whole game into a gray model and then we'll just polish up.
Yeah.
Why do you think polishing as you go is a better way to develop games rather than, you know, kind of doing like, oh, this is our base implementation level?
Yeah. Well, I think that like there's a relationship between the developer and the player, even from the very start of a game, because at some point you're going to have to give it to a friend. You're going to have to give it to a coworker, or you're going to have to play it. And for me, it's like, you know, looking at gray boxes just isn't exciting and it's not motivating. So from like an emotional point of view, I think it's really important to like to be into what you're actually making and not just having to look ahead to when it's going to be cooler and more fun to look at. Like, that's a bummer. I hate that. A lot of it has to do with the fact that I'm an artist too. And since I can't program, I've got to do art. So it's just kind of in my nature to be doing that already. But yeah, just like, you know, I've been on projects where that's not happening. And as the artist, it's hard to be motivated. It's like, yeah, I'm playing this and it's gray boxes in a gray environment with one light and I am so bored and I kind of know what you're trying to do, but like, I'm done. I played it for 5 seconds. Cool. But with action games especially, because so much of the feel and the fun of the game comes from, like I was saying earlier, the animation, the effects, like what the characters look like, all this stuff, like you want that to be in place so that, yeah, you can be excited and you can kind of see what the game is all about. Like, you can have this brilliantly designed combat system with, you know, gray rigs with no features and no effects and no sounds, but like, how dull is that going to be? No one's going to be into it. So yeah, I guess a lot of it just comes down to the relationship between the people making the game and the people that are going to motivate them along the way to continue doing it because they're excited.
All right. So from a combat perspective, we talked a little bit about this and maybe you've already covered it, but what are your pet peeves for games that come out today in the combat centric genre, the brawler, the, you know, your traditional fighter, that sort of thing?
I guess the biggest pet peeve is just when that polish isn't there. And that's actually why I do the consultation work that I do, because I intuitively understand that polish and where the feel comes from. But for some reason, it's not, you just don't see it everywhere you should. Like, I can't even tell you how many games I've played. And it's like, this could be really fun, but these effects suck. These animations suck. Like, there's a solid system here, but I don't want to push the buttons. Like, I don't want to swing my sword because it's going to be dull. And so that's the biggest one right there, and it's the most common. But I guess other things is just kind of a, you know, higher level design things, like, you know, when enemies do a certain thing. Like, okay, so the most recent thing I can think of is that DMC, the one from a year or two ago, which I really enjoyed. DMC had this big problem where you could turn your back to an enemy so that they were off camera, and then they would completely go inert. So, like, if you got this big scary guy that's normally a huge threat, and then just walked away from him a little bit and then turned around so you couldn't see him anymore, he wasn't going to do anything, like, ever, until you looked at him again. And I understood why they did that. It's like, they don't want things coming from off screen to surprise people. And I totally understand that. But that was a bad solution, because it gave me way more control over the fight than I should have had as a player. And so it's just nitpicky things like that. It's like, okay, you've given me a lot of power and now I'm not engaged as much. But I guess it kind of depends on the game. I feel like I see it all over the place, but the biggest one is just that polish. It's so often not there.
Is there aside from that DMC reference, is there one in particular that pops out that was like, oh, if they did this, this could have been just epically amazing?
The one that I can think of off the top of my head is Muramasa from Vanillaware on the Wii. They had some mechanics where you could cancel it with a dodge. They had a really fantastic dodge where you would, like, fly across the screen all ninja style. But they had some mechanics that just arbitrarily were prohibited from dodge canceling. So it's this really bizarre thing where I would just randomly be in the habit of dodging and I couldn't do it because I was inside one of those weird mechanics where it's not allowed. It was so frustrating. Like, yeah. Like, you guys get you made me build this habit, and then now it's a weird form of punishment because of an arbitrary decision. I mean, maybe there's something really fucked up happening during testing, but, like, you need to come up with a better solution because I got randomly punished.
Right.
Yeah.
So can you tell me, in your opinion, what are the top three things that you need to focus on to have a good combat system?
I'm biased, but I'm going to go with mine. I need to have some style. It's the reason I'm not super into old beat 'em ups anymore. Like, there isn't any style, and that's a bummer. I really like the expression. I like being able to watch five different people play a game and see five different styles, and so that's huge for me. Mm-hmm. At this point, I can't even tolerate a game where there's only one way to play it, and that's a deal breaker. I want enemies that control you. Like the Devil May Cry thing was a huge violation because I'm having fun because I'm having to work around this really aggressive nonsense. And if you give me power over that and I get to change it, or the enemies aren't challenging me, that's a bummer. And I guess that's kind of how I feel about Ninja Gaiden too. It's like, Ninja Gaiden enemies were very challenging, but they also weren't prompting me to do anything interesting. Like, they weren't prompting me to be greater. Whereas Devil May Cry enemies, like, they've got all these different classic Devil May Cry. Like, you've got enemies that do completely different things, and they've got these states where they won't get hurt, and they have these different ways of approaching you. And you had to be awesome. And so I need to beat them up to, like, make me want to be awesome. And I guess those are the big ones. I can't think of any more off the top of my head. I mean, like, apart from all the stuff I've already said already, like the polish and making sure it looks and feels good. But yeah, I guess I'm just a really, really big style guy at the end of the day. Like, give me a lot of tools and then make me use them in cool ways. And if you don't do that, I'm bored.
Gotcha.
Because I'm gonna run all over your game and it's going to be tedious.
Gotcha. Overall, what are your favorite three games as well? Like, what are your top games that you're like, these things have inspired me and taken me to the level of understanding that I'm at today because they're so awesome? Obviously, Alien versus Predator is probably
right. Yeah. Alien versus Predator for sure. I'm generally a huge, huge, huge fan of Hideki Kamiya's games. Like, he did the first Devil May Cry. He did Beautiful Joe, Okami, Bayonetta, Wonderful 101. All of his stuff is just kind of inspirational from a system standpoint. Like, he always comes up with these really interesting and novel things to do inside his combat system that kind of makes it different from the other combat games. And that's really cool. And that was kind of inspired me to create like our blood system and our sacrifice system. Like, what could be a cool game inside the game to do here? But Bayonetta was huge. Like, Bayonetta is probably one of my favorite combat games of all time. Other than that, I'm going to say Dota. I've been playing Dota in the last year, and I kind of put it up there with Street Fighter these days, honestly, like in terms of its depth and complexity.
Really?
And it's been super inspirational for me because of the like sheer variety of totally insane mechanics. You know, like every character has like 4 to 6 different things they can do, but like the variety of effects and state modifications and functions and just the depth of use there has been like amazing. Like, I've gotten so many rad mechanic ideas just playing Dota with like, you know, a couple characters at the start. And then as it went on and I got more comfortable with more characters, it just got more and more inspiring. And that was super cool.
So I had a follow-up question for you too. A lot of the stuff that you mentioned is pretty fast paced gameplay. Yeah. You're talking about Devil May Cry and Bayonetta. Mm-hmm. Are you a Dark Souls fan at all?
No. So the only reason I'm not a Dark Souls fan is because, I guess the quickest and stupidest way to say it is because I'm a Monster Hunter fan. Like, if I put them kind of in the same category of like, here's combat systems that are really, really punitive, and they're commitment based and it's really easy to make mistakes. And I love that. I think that's so fun. But because of like my own like visual arts bias, I'm going to play Monster Hunter 100% of the time because I love looking at it. And I hate looking at Dark Souls. Like, I hate that gray, murky, dark, scary world. It's not enjoyable to me. I want to be into it so bad, but why would I ever play it if I can play Monster Hunter, which is like an acid trip for a child? You know what I mean? Like, these huge monsters and this ridiculous armor and weapons and all these stupid effects and this over-the-top Japanese music. Like, it's the sensation of it. It's the only reason it beats Dark Souls. I want to be into it so bad, but I just can't. It's too ugly.
So you also had mentioned Ninja Gaiden a couple of times. What are your thoughts on that? Because that, I feel like, is sort of a mix of the two genres that we were just talking about, right? Because it is more committed, but it's also kind of fast paced.
Yeah. To me, it's always kind of been an awkward mix of the two. Like, I've always had a hard time enjoying them just because it feels like the kind of thing where I should be aggressive. It looks and feels like a beat 'em up, and it's almost like, here's the expectation. Here's what you're supposed to do. Oh, except you're doing it, now you're getting punished for it. Where I guess I've developed, I mean, I've been playing Monster Hunter since I was like, you know, since the first one a long time ago, but my expectations were set accordingly, and they never got adjusted for Ninja Gaiden for some reason, because it looks and feels like a beat-em-up. So yeah, I could never get over that awkward mix of it, because I would just get my ass handed to me. It's like, I want to be aggressive, oh, I'm fucked. Oh, awesome, cool. I can only do that for like an hour before, you know, I'm just going to play something else. But yeah, it's a very strange expectations thing. Like, it just looks and feels too much like Devil May Cry.
Gotcha. All right. Well, you know, I've expended my amount of questions. I had like 20 something on here. So I think we're at an end of our interview, good sir.
It's great. I appreciate it. Those are great questions, man. That was a fun conversation.
Yeah, no, I mean, I really appreciate you coming on, because I'm trying to have this weird you know, array of people that are coming on that have different backgrounds and stuff, and then combat to me is always really interesting to talk about. So thank you for coming on.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, and thank you for listening to the show. If you're interested in checking out more, check out my Patreon at patreon.com/StephenFrost. And Ben, what are we plugging for you? Where do people go to check out Aztez?
Yeah, if you want to see the game, just go to Aztez.com. There's a trailer, there's a press kit, there's the blog that links right from it. But yeah, everything you want to know about the game, Aztez.com.
Very cool. Well, thank you for coming on the show, and thanks for listening. Adios, guys.